Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Jules Gale, that is a beautiful, beautiful mug. Where did you get it from, good sir?
He's not just complimenting me on my beautiful, shiny face. No, no, no. People listening to the UBP, the UBP, the UBP.
The UBP.
Or the Untitled Banter Podcast. I have finally got my hands on my own mug. Hooray.
Oh, it's beautiful. It's beautiful.
Look at it. I'm rotating it like it's part of some crappy QVC. In fact, it's just QVC at this point here. You can buy these mugs now. Why don't you tell them the very short and catchy link that they can get their mugs from, mate?
The URL that just rolls off the tongue is whatculture-wrestling.creator-spring.com.
I tell you what,
massive shout out to everybody who's bought a mug so far. You guys have helped us become the best-selling piece of merch on that entire website. So huge shout out to the UBP mug massive.
I cannot believe that, like, to all the other people that have worked so hard to get their products onto the marketplace. And then there's us, two absolute idiots, some onions with mugs that just come on here, just like peeling all over the place, just going, yes, mate, buy our mugs, buy our
some doodle daddies. I think, I don't know if we're beating the entirety of Creator-Spring. I only have stats for the walk culture
side.
Let's just say that we're doing pretty well. And also want to do a massive shout out to Bungalist Massive for this week's thumbnail. They submitted a really lovely, colourful version of the UBP.
It looked great, didn't it?
Which, if I've clicked the right buttons, should be the thumbnail for this podcast. But yes, this is the UBP, the UBP, the UBP. Where myself, Scott Tailford, is joined by Jules Gill, going through all sorts of questions and talking points and whatever you guys want to send in. So first question from James Gutierrez, who says, love the mugs, but when will we get UBP branded robes? Also,
whoa,
thoughts on the Witcher 1 remake from the ground up using Unreal Engine 5. Now, I'd not even thought about UBP robes.
Because we had Gown
robes.
Gang for the longest time, didn't we?
When we started
the lockdown recordings and neither of us could be, what's the technical term? Oh yeah, bothered to get dressed at all. Yeah, we were in our dressing gowns pretty much like the entire day, weren't we?
See, when they said robes, I thought like silk robes, like
what,
beautiful.
What, like kingly robes?
Finally, yeah, like kingly robes. Like what King Josh was wearing on the video, which will be live at this point. Actually, go watch our Valiant video.
Yes.
But yeah, that's what I was thinking of. If they mean dressing gowns, then that's way more doable. Like a towel dressing gown.
That would actually be really cool because you could have my face on one and then your face on the other variant as well. Mm-hmm. Or you could have one that has both of our faces on the back. And that would actually be really nice. You know,
maybe
what?
One on each shoulder.
I'm surprised that Spring doesn't offer dressing gowns. Maybe it does, and I'm completely missing this. We'll actually have a look at this because I'm going to petition. Is that the next thing? My goal is to whatever the people want. Mm-hmm. I'm going to make it happen because the best part of this is Scott and I receive 0%. That is right, 0% of all of the sales from this. So this is literally just a joke for us.
This is for love.
Yeah, for love.
Love and sharing. Yeah, I wanted to see what else we can get put together because I do want to do a range of mugs in general for What Culture Gaming. I want to get a regular podcast one going and a wind-up one for me and Josh with our faces from the wind-up artwork too. Get a whole round of them going. But yeah, what do you think of The Witcher 1 remake? This was the leaked game that was initially codenamed as Canis Majoris or something like that.
Which makes sense now because of Wolf. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Is that what that is? I didn't know that.
Canis is wolf or Latin for the wolf sub-breed. So I think that Majoris is the big wolf. I guess that's the most...
That makes perfect sense. I was trying to go off like Canis Canem Edit, like, you know, when they renamed Bully in the UK.
Oh, yeah, because that means like, dog eat dog.
Dog. Yeah, which I guess is, you know, dog, wolf. It's not
because
too far
edit up. Is Latin for kill, effectively. So when you're saying I'm editing, you're killing something to reborn it. So when it's dog eat dog, that's dog kill dog in this sense.
That's cool. But yeah, so CDPR finally got out there and confirmed one of the leaked projects that they had in the works, saying that they're remaking the original Witcher using Unreal Engine 5. Mm-hmm. They'll have to completely remake Geralt because Geralt in Witcher 1 looks... diseased.
He's so ill. He's so very ill that somebody should just give him a warm blanket and a cup of hot tea because he needs mm-hmm. to sit down. He should not sit be out down. Witchering right now. But I'm so glad that they are, because this is one of the very few remakes in recent memory, thanks to Sony completely dropping the ball on the entire concept, that feels deserved. This is a remaster or remake that they can go into and address so many of the issues. And CD Projekt Red have a great reputation with the very specific example of the first Witcher for taking on fan feedback and changing everything. Because I don't know if you remember that when the Witcher released way back way, it wasn't in a good state at all. It was it was a good game, but it was hampered by so many UI issues, so many bugs, so many issues in general. Mm-hmm. So they took on that feedback and they released a massive patch that fixed nearly everything. And it took
them, the enhanced edition?
Yeah, it took them like a year and a half after the game was released in order to do this. So if they take the same careful approach, apply that to the feedback they got for the enhanced edition, we could be looking at a game that is arguably better than The Witcher 3, which many people hold in very high regard.
I do. The thing with The Witcher 1 is that it's nowhere near as big as Witcher 2 or 3. Like they sort
but that's
of,
fine, isn't it?
I like the idea of them being a bit more focused. Because the thing is, I wonder if like making a more focused overall game like direction or whatever means that you can kind of prioritize visuals or prioritize certain set pieces or whatever. Like some of my favorite parts of The Witcher 3 are like defending Kaer Morhen. Like the whole siege on Kaer Morhen, and it's such a great set piece. And it's like, I've not played through The Witcher 1. Like, I downloaded it. I played the very beginning of it. But I was like, I just kind of did it as like a curio. I was just like, what does this feel like? And it is old, like 2007, I think.
Yeah, it's a challenging game when you especially compare it to the ease of accessibility that The Witcher 3 offers. And I think that the Witcher 1 is probably deeper, I would say, in terms of the way you can approach combat with mixing potions and all of the other crazy stuff you can do. But I do feel like to people coming in, it is quite daunting. So if they address that and they give us sort of middle ground between the accessibility of Witcher 3 and the sort of customization of Witcher 1, we could get something that's really spicy, and I'm very much here for it.
I like the idea of the elemental stuff as well kind of being relied on more. Like, I know that obviously in the other Witchers, like if you crank the difficulty up, it's like, it's one of those things where like, it's like you're going to go down in one hit unless you have a specific elemental buff or something. And I kind of like the idea of that, like preparing for certain fights and stuff, and some of the higher levels in Witcher 3, I did like that. But then sometimes for me, it was just a bit too like stat graphy, where I was just like, oh, I've not got the exact number right, and now I'm down again, and I've got to go try again and eat this potion and whatever.
It's but kind of a bit weird as well, because like, imagine if you're told, it's like, oh, there's a fight coming up, you need to prepare for it, and you go, okay, well, I'm just going to stack a load of generic buffs on there. But like you say, you might come up against something that is completely resistant except for one elemental thing that you didn't prepare for. So you die, you reload, and you basically just apply all the stuff you've got for that. Now that to me on paper doesn't actually seem like as great a feature as is intended, because you're not actually preparing for the fight. You're basically just playing the game the way it wants to be played and have to die in order to learn from your mistakes in order to do it. And it's not really changing much, apart from somebody who would normally just walk into a battle, die, and then change their gear and do it anyway. Like, it's
That's true. Yeah. I just wonder like if they can kind of make Witcher combat feel a bit more distinct. Like, I like Witcher 3's like pirouetting sort of acrobatic stuff. I like dropping the signs and everything. But yeah, it depends how much they want to flesh out from the original. Because even the camera is like right over Geralt's shoulder. It's way more like one-on-one. Kind of like a bit like God of War, I guess. So yeah, I guess we'll see what they do. But being on Unreal Engine 5 is very promising. Like, obviously the overall look of Unreal 5 just does look insane. That feels like that's when the generation kicks in, is when more games have that overall. And so tentatively excited for me. It's been forever since The Witcher 1. So I kind of, I'm curious what they... how they approach it.
Now, obviously, this has just been leaked, so we don't actually have any confirmed like dates that it's going to be dropping, do
we? Not any dates. They just they confirmed, CDPR themselves said it was in production, but I don't think they've sketched any dates out for it. If they do, it's just years in advance, because as far as I know, it's not very far along.
I'm still absolutely aghast at how many new projects they're taking on at the moment, because it's got this, we've got the new Cyberpunk game, we've got the Cyberpunk expansion, we've got some other Witcher sequel trilogy.
The whole
that
new
they've,
Witcher game, yeah.
There's a lot of big projects that they're working on, and it took them how many years to put Cyberpunk out there? It was like, what, 7, 8
years? Total it was like 8 or something, like 2013 I think was when it first got talked about.
And if they're going to start trying to roll out these releases closer together in order to capitalize on the popularity of The Witcher, I really hope that we're not going to see another launch day debacle that was like Cyberpunk.
I mean that's the thing,
they don't have a good reputation for releasing games well. I mean, Witcher 1, as it first was, we just described, it came out in a not perfect state. Cyberpunk,
even The Witcher 3 didn't launch very well. Like, I mean, it took like a good few patches to get that sorted. Like, that thing's launch day state wasn't the best. Like, it, yeah. And I think they'll get there over time. But yeah, I mean, even that new Witcher project is a trilogy. Like, they, but then they were asked about that and they said they had some way of doing it where they can do three games. I'm sure it's one every year or one every 2 years or something. So I guess they know what they're doing. They kind of need to rebuild their reputation, but it's betting it all on this. Like, if they can pull this off, then cool. But this seems like a hell of a thing to try after Cyberpunk was on fire. But yes, next question from Matthew McGowan, who says, Sub-Zero, Scorpion, or Reptile?
Oh, great question. Oh, that's tough really question. Tough. Well, the thing is that if I'm going to go absolute cheese, then for me, it's Scorpion, just because of the fact that he was utterly broken in Mortal Kombat 10 for a while, at least. Just the ease of which he was able to spam his abilities, the fact that you've got a teleport thing, the fact that you've got the, obviously, the get over here, what's it called? Harpoon? Kunai
like
chain
spear,
sort of
thing.
Like, there's loads of the stuff that he was just good at. So he was like the Swiss Army knife of fighting against other people. So yeah, in terms of if I wanted to win, I would choose Scorpion. It was far easier to use him.
I am a huge Scorpion fan. I have figures of Sub-Zero and Scorpion. I feel like Scorpion's like the Mario of Mortal Kombat. Like, he's the go-to. He's really good, really cool. But yeah, in MK11, they addressed that, the cheesy stuff. Like, you have to burn one of his specials to do the get over here thing into
I'm
one.
So
into
glad
an
that they did.
Yeah, I know. I love MK11. I think it's like the best thing NetherRealm have made. But yeah, I'd probably go Scorpion as well. Like, I love ice stuff. And I feel like in Scorpion's Revenge, the anime, Sub-Zero is an absolute tank in that thing. Yep. And loads of his fatalities are badass. But yeah, Scorpion as well, the way he, the whole beginning of that movie where he's just decimating Sub-Zero's clan is great. So yeah, I'd go Scorpion, even though he's kind of the obvious one. People love Reptile, though. Like, where do you come down on Reptilian Reptile or Ninja Reptile?
Well, the thing is that Reptile as a whole, well, he was like one of the first secret characters, wasn't he? Like, hinted at throughout the games, and then all of a sudden he got his like full release on there. And yeah, I love what he represents in terms of, ooh, there's a secret character. I didn't like his original incarnation, which was obviously just a green color palette swap. But I actually prefer the sort of more reptilian versions of him, because I was like, yeah, if you're going to call something reptile, make him reptilian. Have him like spit acid and actually be able to do that with his physiology, rather than just, hey, look, I'm a guy down the pub and, oh, look, I've vomited acid into my pint of Tetley's.
Because I remember everyone who like loved like original Ninja Reptile was like, well, Scorpion's not a scorpion, and like, he could become a scorpion in like Mortal Kombat 4.
Yeah,
I was just like, I like, because Reptile's finisher was always eating someone's head.
Yeah,
like,
I mean, that's cool.
That's kind of cool. So like, I'm full on. I'll take Scorpion out of these three, but I'm a big fan of Reptilian Reptile as well. Next question from Alpha Oliver, who says, do you think we'll ever get rid of big corpo problems? A skin in Overwatch 2 for the price of £26 will only teach companies how to manipulate better and readjust prices. Whoever first launched with 1,000 known bugs just said, we're sorry, and took weeks to fix with nothing ever changing.
Wait a minute. Is that $26 thing actually true?
Oh, yeah. I mean,
there's
an
Overwatch skin for $26?
Yeah. It's, well, I think it's the amount of coins you need to buy the skin is like £25 or £26 in total. It's like a one-off ridiculous transaction.
That's insane.
Oh, yeah, like, nearly everything surrounding Overwatch 2's marketplace is hyperinflated. That entire game feels like it's just taking advantage of a fandom's love for something. Like, it doesn't feel like they've done anything on their part to be worth new love.
Yeah.
So it's just sort of, here's the entire marketplace, go buy as much stuff as you want.
Like, Overwatch 2, I won't lie, I didn't play Overwatch 1 that much, but I followed it. I followed a lot of people playing it, and you know what? I love those animations. I think that they were each like awards worthy. They were fantastic. So when Overwatch 2 was announced, and obviously the new PvE feature was rolled out, and they were saying, oh, we're going to update a lot of stuff, and we're going to make it free to play, I was like, okay, there's an interest in there that's growing within me, because the barrier to entry is next to nothing. But then when I saw what was on offer, I was like, oh, it is just the same game. It's
it's literally the same game.
It's not like some of the maps haven't even changed, and they've taken away some of the other ones. And I'm like,
now it's at night.
I was like, oh man, this seems the lowest effort that they could have possibly gone with for that.
Well, that's the thing. So I just had a quick Google, so I wanted to make sure. So it's $25 for one of the witch skins, for the new character Kiriko,
and
her Halloween skin. But yeah, it's almost coin-based. You need 2,600 coins, which you can't. I think you can get some coins if you grind out enough gameplay. But that'll take hundreds of hours,
I imagine, will it?
Yeah, that whole economy is very skewed towards, like, just give us money so you can do the thing. But yeah, that's my overall vibe with Overwatch 2. I've deleted it now. I downloaded it when it first came out, played a handful of matches. Like you said, it was very like, oh, this is just the original again, but with a different free-to-play monetization model around it. And it's effective, I guess, in terms of getting people to play it because it's free-to-play.
Yeah.
But that's about it. Like, the barrier of entry is lower, but the overall grind is a lot higher. It just doesn't feel good to interact with. It feels like you're being taken advantage of in terms of your fandom or your time. I just think it sucks, in that regard.
It's a real shame as well, because the PvE feature that I know that many people want isn't even there on the day of launch, and it's like coming soon, I know. But
that was meant to be the one big thing to justify Overwatch 2.
That's actually what I was excited about playing, and when that comes out, I probably will download it and play, because we were talking about this the other day, weren't we? It was like, I love co-op games so much more than I love competitive games. Like, if somebody says, oh, look, there's... like, Halo Infinite is only fun if I'm playing with you guys on multiplayer. Oh, okay. I don't like jumping on if it's just going to be Miva and a random group that I don't know. Right. And I love the idea of doing co-op stuff. So obviously when that was shelved as well, the co-op single player thing, I was like, well, there goes any invested interest that I've got left of this game. In fact, that circles back to the question we've been answered about big corpo problems. One of their big problems is their refusal to accept that people want to play together sometimes. And you can still monetize that in some weird ways if you want to, but the amount of co-op games that I've seen that have just had all of their stuff cut out from them, it's shocking nowadays.
Well, it feels like the only go-to is either it's a four-person loot shooter or it's competitive PvP, skill-based matchmaking, whatever. Like, it tends to be one of the other two. Like, actual, like, two-player co-op stuff and done that, like, steers into it is very rare. Like, It Takes Two is one of the only, for me, one of the only great co-op games.
And it's so rare, those types of games to come out, and that's why they're celebrated as much. And you think to yourself, somebody's got to be looking at this and going, oh, I wonder, It Takes Two's gotten a really good review recently. I wonder why that is. Oh, because it's addressing a market that still needs to be satiated.
And local co-op as well, like sitting with someone that you love or care about, your friend or whatever, and then going through a story together. That's a whole thing that rarely is ever tapped into.
Look at how much of a blast that we had when we were playing The Valiant the other day. Like, this is the rare thing, is that we do a lot of ad campaign stuff, and it's always better if the game that you're playing you actually enjoy. And Scott, myself and Josh, when we played the three-player co-op survival thing, we were having an absolute blast. We were terrible at it, but it was so much fun to do, because
we got to wave six.
We did, and we were like just 50? Having a great time doing that. I've actually gone back on it and played it loads more, right? And there's other people that have like helped me get to like the max level, and I've been like, oh, these guys, but they are way over leveled already, these people here. They've got like crazy skills that I'm looking at going, oh, that's on the skill tree that's like three pages of scrolling down sort of thing.
we barely stood a chance. There was a lot of fire and we burned alive, but we got through a few waves of stuff. But yeah, I think the big corpo thing, that whole thing of, you know, any sort of dev, any publisher, seeing how much they can get away with. I remember with Destiny, it was like they charged like $18 or something for dance emotes. There was like two dance emotes that you could pay for. And I think in this case, it's just them seeing what the Overwatch fandom will pay for, and they're capitalizing on new character, Halloween time period, what price tag can we put on that, and then seeing how many people will pay for it. So those problems, those issues will go away if enough people don't pay for it. I feel like there's been a backlash to this online, not a massive one, but I've seen a few people sharing like, this is too far, like this is too much of a price tag for one skin. It's almost the price of, like, you know, half of it, if you double it, would be the price of a whole game or something. So yeah, I guess we'll see how it shakes out. There'll always be someone trying to take advantage of you in regards to money in video games. At the minute, it's just Blizzard.
I don't like the fact that there's, as the question posed, that they can do this. They can come out, they can basically try and grab as much cash from your wallet as possible, and then when there's enough backlash, go, oh, sorry, we're removing it, and then they look like the good guys for doing it. I was actually doing a voiceover for a list the other day, and the way that it was described is that they, Starbreeze Studio with Payday 2, they didn't have loot boxes or safes in that game until Starbreeze came in and they said, we're putting them into the game. People backlashed and they took them back out again. And people praised them and said, oh, that was a really good call of them to take them out of the game. They was really showed humility. I was like, no. They put them in the first place. You don't give credit for somebody apologizing. You still have to admonish them slightly for the damage they did.
Yeah, it's that weird. I mean, I obviously, like, yeah, I do, like, applaud them listening to feedback, but at the same time, like you said, sometimes it's just nakedly opportunistic in the first place.
Is it listening to feedback, or is it them going, oh, boys, listen, like, we've literally seen a massive drop in our player base. We are going to go bankrupt if we don't undo this.
If their
player base levels had stayed the same, dipped a little bit, they would have kept them in. It's not learning from feedback. It's learning from, oh, God, we're going to be punished with the thing that actually matters, which is money.
Oh, totally. I mean, the things that you mentioned Halo Infinite before, like that game when it launched, had that really pricey, grindy storefront.
That fuming feel.
And then, you know, there was all the feedback to that, and they were like, yep, we heard you, we're going to change it. And it's like, Halo Infinite, I mean, I've got over 100 hours playing that game, but I can't believe the state that thing launched in and continues to be in. Yeah. The absolute messy rollout, all the different experiments they keep doing. Maybe it's this feature, we'll take this out, we'll put this map in, we'll take it out. Like, just, it's all over the place.
It's their flagship game. It is Microsoft game, and they haven't got it right. Nintendo are looking there going like, whoa, say what you like about our first party titles costing never going on to sale, but at least we make them bloody well.
Yeah, at least we're not tweeting you every week going like, is this have we got it right yet? Is it, should we change that?
Little sidebar, by the way, just me and you here. Played that Mario Kingdoms Spark of Hope. It's brilliant. It's so good.
I know.
It's so good. I hate the fact that I love it so much. It's so good.
Dude, I'm that's the thing, because I finished God of War. I can say I finished God of War Ragnarok, so my life couldn't resume. So I've been going back on Mario and Rabbids. And yeah, that game is gorgeous, man. Like, it was, the original one was great anyway, but I love how in this one they've sort of made it so you run around almost like you're in a 3D platformer,
yeah,
and then you're
like
chaining
together
the strategy.
Not like on the grid stuff. I'm actually, and I know this is going to sound insane for people that have followed my career and love of XCOM, but there are elements of that I hope the future XCOM games borrow, because the ability to use your squad mates in tandem in your own go, that is brilliant. That is something that should be in XCOM games.
This is what
I
was telling you in 2017.
Could you imagine if they have it so that one of your characters runs across, you know, they have like the big mechanized turret systems there, runs across there, the system moves with it to provide covering fire against the things, so it ends its turn together and allows it, like, there's combinations that could easily work so well with that game.
Dude, I mean, that whole thing of, like, you can leap off, like, your friends or whatever and get to places, you can sort of, like, slide into enemies, do a bit of damage, chip damage or whatever, and that's all part of your one go, and you can go back and forth between your team and, like, advance together and then end your turn and then do the next thing. Yeah, man, I think that thing has a really good strategic soul to it, but it's also quite fresh and it feels like a platformer in spots.
It's not stupidly difficult either, so you don't feel too bad if your plan doesn't work out. There's always a way to come back from defeat, whereas in XCOM, as we both know, if you make a mistake, oh, sorry, you're dead. Not even the next turn, like 10 turns down the line, you've doomed yourself.
Also, score by Grant Kirkhope and Gareth Coker Grant Kirkhope at this stage, one of the best brass style scores, like really bombastic old school cartoon kind of energy. I love that dude. I love his approach to music, composing and everything. That whole game, it's just gorgeous. Like, I'm absolutely loving it.
Have you ever seen his little conversation piece that he did with the Game Grumps years ago? That was when John Tron was still a part of it with Aaron Hansen. They had him on as a guest, and he just explained in detail while they were playing Banjo-Kazooie all of the things he did and all the secrets he hid in the musical score.
Nice.
I was like, that is brilliant. I'd love it if they could do more stuff with gamers like that. Play the game that they worked on, and it unlocks new memories for them rather than just like a sit-down interview. You're showing them specific examples, but she goes, oh, did I ever tell you about this? Blah, 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 blah.
There's a really good video. I sent this to Sally the other day. There's a really good video on Ars Technica where they sit down with an old member of Naughty Dog about how they hacked the PS1 to make Crash Bandicoot work.
Amazing.
And it's like they had to like go into the guts of how it was rendering stuff and completely whatever they did, some technical wizardry that they did to make Crash 1 run way more smoothly, and like the amount of detail that was in that level and the way that it handles like levels of detail based on proximity and all that kind of stuff. And that's why Crash 1 felt so revolutionary in like 98 or whatever.
That's really cool.
Because they were doing things that literally no one else had done before.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more.
So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
Which is really cool. Next question from Jacob Rogers says, UBP.
Mm-hmm.
Hope you legends are well. With Sony announcing that a new studio will help Naughty Dog develop a new game, would you like to see a new IP or a revisit of a classic? Cough, Jack 4.
Oh, see, now you're on the right tracks there, my friend, with Jack, but unfortunately you've chosen the wrong element here, because yes, we should get more Jack and Daxter, but we should get a remake of Jack X Combat Racing, the final game. See, this is the best part, and I love stating this fact. Everyone always thinks, oh, Jack 3 was the final game that Naughty Dog made and had a hand in. No, wrong, fool. It is Jack X. They gave us a kart racer and then peaced out into the sunset.
What they need to do, because they used to do that thing, it was like three games and a kart racer. Crash, yep. 1, 2, 3, Crash Team Racing. And
Uncharted, kart racer, let's go.
Honestly, give me the mature Naughty Dog kart racer. Let me have Joel, Ellie, Abby, Drake.
Do you know what you call it? Uncarted.
That feels like the most obvious thing in the world.
Let's do it.
It's staring them in the face. Like, sometimes they steer into this sort of more cartoony style on Christmas cards and Halloween cards on the Sony Twitter account and everything. And it's like they did all the memes when the game's launched, but it's like, just steer into it. Literally, ironically.
Yeah.
Just do a kart racer with all their mature franchises. I remember when, did you ever see the sketches that leaked for Jack 4? They were like, idea of like an actual dude called Jack, and Daxter was like a rat that lives on his shoulder.
Oh no.
And it's like, that was the direction they were going in after Uncharted 3, and they were going to do another Jack and Daxter called Jack 4, but it was going to be all reimagined and realistic and whatever.
Oh no,
and,
no thank you.
They apparently, as they were sketching that out, they were like, we're getting so far away from what Jack and Daxter is or what anyone would want, and it became The Last of Us.
No way, is that actually true? It became The Last of Us?
Yeah, that's in their 30th anniversary art book, which I massively recommend. There's some really good insights into that. So they initially had this idea for Jack 4 to be this like realistic thing, which I trust Naughty Dog, but I don't want that. If they do a Jack 4, I think they should do a throwback to platforming with everything that they've learned over the years.
I really, really hope that someone out there has done a mod for The Last of Us where they replace like either Ellie or Joel with either Jack or Daxter, because that would be hilarious.
Mm-hmm. Where'd you come down on Daxter? I always love Dax, but I get like people like hate him.
Oh, he's infuriating. He is the claptrap of a different generation. Absolutely.
He's the Minions of back in the day.
Aggressively annoying. He's just always doing the wrong things. He's always getting the heroes into trouble, and he never makes any situation better. But he has an honest heart and he tries his best. And that is all you can ask from people from time to time.
True. I think overall, I want them to do a new thing. I push for new stuff all the time. And I feel like in Naughty Dog's case, I want their next new IP. There was a
Where do they even go from here? Like,
well, that's the thing. So there was a couple of things leaked for them. One was a fantasy game where it seemed like a medieval thing with a female protagonist. There was some sketches that leaked from one of their artists on like LinkedIn or something. So that's like a nice swerve for them because they've done like lots of modern stuff and all fantasy stuff.
Yeah, that could be really cool.
Yeah, like Jack and Daxter, and I was like, maybe you do like a, like almost like a, I don't want to do like a Soulsian comparison, but a, that style, like old school medieval type thing, something like Kingdom Come Deliverance or something.
Or Drakengard.
And do a really good story. Yeah, yeah, and do like a really, really good story. And then the other thing is that they keep teasing sci-fi stuff. They've teased Savage Starlight as the comic that Ellie reads in The Last of Us. And I'm sure that popped up somewhere else as well. And it was like they talked about maybe doing a sci-fi game.
Well, they've already said, haven't they, that the Uncharted games and Last of Us are linked together. So if they did another one where they had a shared universe style thing, that could be really fun, actually.
Yeah, I just want to see what they do next. Like, I want to see what the next, like clean slate. You've had this insane trajectory over the years of, like weird, like, 2D RPGs in the 90s into Crash Bandicoot, into Jack and Dax, Uncharted, Last of Us. What is your next thing? Because the last generation of consoles was the first time they did, like, fourth installments for stuff or extra stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, Uncharted was done, and then they did Uncharted 4, and it's not like 4 isn't great, but, like, I want to know what you do next because they used to have such a great turnaround of franchises.
Yeah. I mean, they're great at creating mascots no matter what they do, even if they are just regular people. They make them into such beloved characters for the medium of video games. So I personally would like to see them return to their sort of melting pot of ideas and create a new cartoony character. I want to go old school. I want another. Like, I can't express how much fun I thought Jack and Daxter was when it first came out.
Oh, same.
Precursor's Legacy, one of my favorite games ever. Jack 2, insanely good. Jack 3, despite all of its flaws here and there with the story, still incredible gameplay. Mm-hmm. And obviously, Jack X Combat Racing, the best game that they've made. So I want
to
see.
Wait a minute, would you prefer Jack X to CTR?
Don't put this in. Don't. I don't want this on the record on the internet, mate.
You can say yes. We're all friends here.
We can't, though. We can't say yes on the internet like this. Like, in the grand annals kart racing games, you've got Mario Kart 8 is the top. That is the best kart racing game I think I've ever played and still is.
I back that.
Then it would be... I'd have to give it to Crash Team Racing and then Jack and Daxter would be underneath that. Like, and then Diddy Kong Racing under that. That's
oh,
and then Speed
Diddy
Freaks
Kong's
under that.
Yeah. I guess you do have, if you're going to go like historically, but between those two, I guess you pick CTR in this game.
It's closer than I thought it was until you...
That's crazy how close that is. I like Jack X, but it doesn't move as well as CTR for me.
Not
I
at
like
all.
How chunky Jack X is.
It's mechanically not as good as CTR in the slightest, but I love the fact that I was coming off of a burnout like spree at that time and it feels so burnouty and I love it. So
yeah, I'd back that. Also, like they actually do the rest of the story in Jack X. Like, there are cutscenes, there are story stuff, and they actually do resolve like Jack gets with Kira in Jack X, which is, they were teasing for the whole trilogy before then. Next question from Pinky, who says, "Hey legends, it's been far too long." It has,
hey,
Pinky,
buddy.
Welcome back. I'm back after many months because I miss being part of the conversation. Can we talk about Assassin's Creed Unity? Scott inspired me to play it again, and it's great. Get past the rough edges, and it's the perfect Assassin's Creed game. I can't be the only one, as I've been matchmaking with online players on PlayStation 5. It seems better supported now than ever before. Yeah, I think that game is like a low-key, shiny little hidden gem, because I feel like it was such an on-fire mess back in 2014. but it's also the last like traditional Assassin's Creed, where it's not ridiculously over the top. It's just like... You know, you can't take out 50 guys at once. It doesn't have syndicates, gang fights. It's just you're an assassin. And it has, like, in the missions themselves, they have, like, Hitman-style, like, go here and trigger this to kill the target in, like, a fancy way. Like, it was, like, Assassin's Creed borrowing from Hitman. And they never did that again. They never did, like set-piece kills, which I think is just a cool thing. So I don't think Unity's perfect, but like Pinky says, I think it's way better than people think it is because they just assume that it's still... The faces are still falling off or whatever.
Yeah. It's a real shame because I do agree with you that the set piece kills and its Hitman liked approach to gameplay was actually really refreshing. And I genuinely wish that it would return to that. I really think that that was a unique facet for Assassin's Creed at the time. And obviously the resurgence of Hitman and Hitman 2 and how well those games have been received does make me wish that maybe Assassin's Creed could implement that again in the future.
It seems like that's what Mirage is going to be, but I guess we'll wait and see until we see like gameplay stuff. But they've said like Mirage is like this back to basics thing. But yeah, if you twin like Assassin's Creed parkour and the movement and like the fluidity of that with like cool like set piece kills and like being able to get in and get out and whatever. Yeah, I would love that stuff. But yeah, Unity is like 8 years old now, so it's had 8 years worth of patches and bits and pieces, and the faces stay on now. Yeah. So it's maybe worth checking something out. Next question from PG Quips, who says, UBP. I've slowly been buying more digital than physical games recently. What for you makes a physical game worth purchasing? I'm a sucker for a nice steel case or a collectible goodie like a canvas map or a mug, of course.
Classic.
Hope everyone at What Culture has a great day. And we also had a question from Honest NPC, who says, hello, you awesome lads. Hope you're doing well. With digital sales taking over physical, what's your most memorable physical purchase that you've bought? Mine was the midnight launch of Halo 3.
Wow.
Oh my god, the Halo 3 energy, like that was life defining. I have the cat helmet one. That
oh,
was
nice. Nice. See, I the only memorable sort of physical release that I can draw from is not a good experience, and that was my Fallout 4 release day, because I waited outside, I queued up, and I was so excited for that. I got my Steelbook edition, I got home, I put it into my PS4 at what, like 2 o'clock in the morning by now, after the walk back home, and maybe had a pint on the way there as well, and then 2 hours patch to download, so fell asleep during that, woke up the next day, felt really groggy, didn't want to play it because I felt really like bad, so then put off another 2 days, and then finally when I got to it, I was just like, oh, this isn't actually all that special. I don't know why I waited up for this, because I'd had a bad sour taste. So that was a poor physical release, because I waited all that time for I think it was a Pip-Boy, a Vault Boy mask, which was crap and broke immediately, and a Steelbook version of the game, which cost me an extra, I think it was £15, so I paid £15 for literally nearly nothing.
Oh, see, the thing is, I do like a good steelbook. I never have anywhere to put them, but I collect steelbooks. Like, I got the Skyward Sword one on Switch, and I got, like, I'm going to get Bayonetta 3 Sky Fancy Edition and everything. But, like, yeah, I mean, when was the last time you bought, like, a collector's edition thing? Or do you tend to stay away from that stuff?
I don't usually buy collector's edition stuff, because the only one that I'm really looking forward to is the Ragnarok version, because it's got those sexy dice. If they've got dice or anything to do with board game stuff in, I am there for it. I think the best one that I actually... I can't even say I bought it, because we got sent it by Sega, was the Valkyrie Chronicles 4 special edition, which had the a model of a tank with all of the main characters on. I want to say it's called the Idolvice. I think that's what it was called. Had a steel book, and it had a little dog hat, which was great, because one of the main characters that you can have in the game is a little Sheba who comes in and heals your people as a medic. But it's like
more
a random encounter. So
life.
More dog medics, please.
I think overall, though, like, yeah, that whole thing has been doing the rounds this week about statistics on digital versus physical. It's doing the rounds for the last, like, few years. But the idea that I'm sure it's 81% of all sales are digital now, and Capcom released some statistic where it's like 91% of their sales are all digital now. So very, very few people are picking up physical. Do you have anything that would get you buying physical again? Like, because I will get a collector's edition. I, for the love of me, cannot find a good collector's edition of Sonic Frontiers. I wanted to throw money at that thing, but I can't get a figure of it.
I think the figures are a good way to do it, because it's like it's a physical totem of your love for the game there. Steelbooks are nice, but not essential in my opinion. I want the tat to be removed. Like, I don't want like a cloth map. I'm not going to use it. Don't give a toss unless the map itself has a secret or a code written on it that you can decipher in game for extra content. Leave it be, mate. Get rid of the postcards. No one's sending postcards with them. That is absolute bollocks.
I put them on my wall. I've got a bunch of old Scarface cards from the Scarface The World Is Yours launch, and they're just on my old wall at my parents' house.
I mean, I guess clothing is okay, because if it's like a limited edition, you can only get it in that one there, and it's decent, not just like the name of the game on there in like Times New Roman. That's tosh. Like, give me something that's really cool. Like, if it's Leon bubbles. S. Kennedy's replica jacket in the game, or a good example would be if a Disco Elysium released with the clothing that was coming out for it, but obviously now we're in tepid water with the developers of or the designers of that
Amazon
game
Land.
Stepping out and doing not wanting anything to do with the gaming industry anymore. So
we did see that jacket at EGX. They were like,
that's the one I was on about. I wanted that jacket.
Yeah, like,
do you know how much it was though?
Wasn't it like a bidding thing for it? So it was really high.
So what they were doing here is it's ridiculously expensive. But what you were doing is you couldn't even buy it from the show floor. You put your name on a mailing list for them to mail you when it was available. It was £399 for one of the jackets on there. And that didn't even include free delivery. And they told me the sob story. It's like, oh, it's just one person making all of these clothes. It's a labor of love. And I totally get that. Respect the artist for that price. But that price should never have been allowed. There should have been more help. There should have been more support. Should have been a better means of manufacturing to bring the cost down, because no one wants to pay £400 for a video game jacket.
No, I also don't think that sole creator will get a big enough cut of the £400 thing anyway.
Definitely
it feels
not.
Like that's going to go to the new management. That just feels like them going, we can exploit that worker, the love that they have
and
for the franchise.
And it sucks, because
so
I bet you anything that there's going to be rails upon rails of those clothing that won't shift, and then there'll have to be a cut price, and that person, the artist, will not get a due day for their hard work. So it sucks. I would have bought it if it was like about £200 cheaper, you know?
Yeah. I'm curious. Yeah, I guess for that particular thing, I'm curious how the whole thing with Disco, I'm so curious how the hell that shakes out. If you ever want to go and Google it, it sounds so crazy.
Have you noticed that it's been like relatively quiet? Like the media hasn't been big on it. And that annoys me in a way, because everyone was hyping up, oh, Disco Elysium's my game of the year. Disco Elysium's the best thing. I retweeted out the day that it broke, because I luckily was in the right place at the right time and saw it happen, and zero interest in it. And I'm like, guys, how much have me and Scott been talking about how much this game needs to be in the public eye, and how we talk about transparency in the game industry? There needs to be more eyes on this. And
I think it's hard, because I think that the trajectory of that was like cultural sort of hidden gem, cult classic kind of indie darling thing, and then massively blown out of proportion by, I'm sure it was Amazon at the top who are in charge of it now, and then there's gonna be a Disco Elysium TV series, which didn't feel like it lined up at all. I think people are just a bit confused as to like, where the hell do I start with this thing? But just go if you have access to it, go pick up Disco Elysium. That thing is incredible. But yes, overall, physical stuff, I remember the Halo 3 days well. For me, it's all figures, it's all stuff that I can put on a shelf, some sort of cool collectible or something. That's what gets me buying. Otherwise, it's digital, because I just want to switch between games faster than get up and put the disc in.
Yeah, it's interesting that you're on about how there's like 80% of people are buying digital, and yet the prices of these games are going up. It's almost like their joke about, or their statement saying that... the reason the prices are going up is still because of physical costs of printed media. It's a lie. Yeah. It's a lie.
We called this ages ago, and that was always the thing with digital storefronts, because then they controlled the pricing. Like if the whole thing of like pre-owned games or physical retailers or whatever, that's the only way you get away from the RRP. Yeah. Anyone hosting a storefront will just charge you as much as they want, which is the Overwatch 2 problem.
I guess that to go back to what physical edition would you buy? I guess a game you love and want to hold on to forever, that is the game you buy. And it doesn't need to be a good game. It's just a game that you love enough to own physically in this day and age. And
that tends to be my thing if I'm going to like keep a hold of it. Yeah.
You know what, though? In about 10, 15, 20 years' time, when these games get removed from the storefronts because of licensing issues or people like folding and publishers changing the rights and whatever, there is going to be a lot of our games that we can't play anymore because we didn't buy them physical. Yeah. And they will be exorbitantly expensive by that point. So I guess now you have to ask yourself, every time a new game comes out, like your Sonic Frontiers case, do you want to own a physical copy so that 10 years down the line you can still say, I own it, even though it's been deleted off of all storefronts for being the worst game ever released in 2020?
To experience the majesty of Sonic Frontiers in 2040 with my grandkids or whatever. I don't know. I think that, I like the whole idea of access points, but I'm so curious of like what is the gaming landscape in the future, because we've pushed so much into digital across the last 10 years. And it's like, do companies honor that? Like, probably not. I mean, even looking at Nintendo going from the virtual console on the Wii U to how the virtual console adjacent stuff is on the Switch, it's nowhere near as well fleshed out. And there's that whole thing from Jim Ryan on Sony's side saying people don't care about this stuff. And they're doing the bare minimum for PlayStation Plus in terms of offering you stuff. Last question from Darren Barkley, who says, Happy Halloween. Is there a particular horror IP you would like to see a game made about? I would like to see an It game. I think that could go a lot of different directions, or they could go a lot of different directions with Pennywise. My favorite mug is also the one with coffee in it.
Oh, legends. Yeah, because I was asking people what their favorite mugs were. So I guess the It game, if it was an asymmetrical multiplayer title, would actually work really well. And I can immediately think off the top of my head, if you used the red balloons as a sort of like, because you know in It, the whole concept is that it feeds off of fear. Whereas like in Friday the 13th, the video game, it's all about killing and stalking your opponents. Mm-hmm. So what you could do is approach the gameplay from a slightly different perspective and have it fear generation being the means in which you damage the other person. So putting the red balloons around, okay, like using windows and doors to suddenly swing open and close.
Oh, and if they keep seeing them, they get more freaked out.
Yeah, they get more freaked out, and that gives you more power, and you evolve, like in the video game Evolve, until your final form, where you then go and start killing the kids or that. The only problem is that it is centered around children, and children being killed probably not going to sell that well with the censor ratings. So
maybe that's why we've not had an It game. I'm sure there's some old school one, but yeah, like that property's barely been approached in video games.
But you can't show a kid being eaten alive. No. Like that probably won't fly.
I think you have to do something where Pennywise is just haunting teenagers or something, kind of like in the Friday the 13th game or something. Like you've got to age it up a little bit. Mine would be The Thing. I just want a Thing game.
You.
I know
yes.
we've had a Thing game, but like I feel like there's definitely a way to either do. Thing is, like, if you're just going to go full anything can happen, then maybe you have the old school approach to The Thing, the one that came out in like 2005 or whatever it was, and where it's story based and certain AI characters are becoming the creature and whatever. Yeah. Or you have a dynamic multiplayer that is plugged into parts of the story, kind of like the Division's multiplayer, and where you're doing the story, you're figuring stuff out, what's going on, you're doing exploration, survival horror style, and then another player can literally be The Thing when they mutate so that they can bust out, or they can pick who they want to bust out of. So that you would never know who's
who. It's like maybe the Deathloop style thing. Yeah,
kind of like Deathloop. And I'm just like, maybe you do a Thing game that's like half Resident Evil 2 remake, half Among Us. And it's because Among Us is pretty much the Thing anyway.
Yeah.
I just want the Thing is my favorite property. And I went to see Halloween Kills the other night. Sorry, Halloween Ends the other night.
Any good?
It's a thing. It's a pictures moved on a screen. That's a weird movie. I appreciate what they went with, but that movie is completely mismarketed. The thing that's in the trailers is only the final 10 minutes. There's a whole other movie in there.
Really?
That they're just not. Oh yeah, that they're not showing at all.
Oh no.
It's all about a different person, different character, and everything else. I quite liked how big of a risk they took and how it made the trilogy feel. But know that if you're going to see that movie, you're not seeing a big old showdown between Laurie Strode and Michael Myers until the last 10 minutes. But yeah, seeing that, because it's John Carpenter doing the music and everything, just reminded me how awesome The Thing is. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, there's so much more you could do with The Thing as an interactive horror experience, like that idea of your friend, just their face breaks and they're the thing all along.
That could be quite cool.
But yes, I forgot, it's Halloween this Sunday. It's Halloween this weekend.
Oh, who knows anymore? Let's ask Ash Millman. Let me just message her that. She says, Halloween is every day, baby. Okay, that's not really helpful.
I'm pretty sure Halloween, will be this weekend. So massive happy Halloween to everyone for enjoying whatever they're doing. Get your pumpkin spice lattes.
Monday the 31st of October.
Maybe drunk from one of our mugs. But for now, this has been the UBP, the UBP.
The UBP.
A massive thank you everybody for sending in their spooky questions and everything else. I've been Scott Tailford. You've been Jules Gill.
I have unfortunately been me.
The truly horrifying reality that's doing
it. It is true, And remember, you can go tune in to next Thursday. Go over to our Twitters. I'm at RetroJ, but the O is a zero, and Scott is at /LP89. And every Thursday, we ask for your questions, gaming related or not. So stay tuned, my friends.
Whatever you prefer. But for now, thank you very much, and we'll catch you next week.
Bye.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love. And be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.